Okay, we're holding in the last words of Lamed Daled Amud Beis, still in the middle of talking about the Meraglim, which was actually a digression from the Gemara. I've been in the middle of quoting a very long Braisa, which we started with back on Lamed Gimel, and has been continuing with interruptions until now to explain what exactly happened when they crossed the Yarden and when they set up the various sets of stones. It's actually, there's an entire Perek in the Tesefta, Anor Masechta, and Tesefta of Sota, that this Braisa that the Gemara has been quoting with interruptions is an entire Perek over there. So eventually we'll get to the end of it. But in between, the Gemara has been digressing to one thing and another in the middle. So, in the middle of the Meraglim, the pasuk says, "Vayeshuvu mitura aretz." They came back from their tour, from their spying around the land. "Vayeuchu vayevoyu," and the pasuk says they went and they came. So Rashi points out the word "vayeuchu" is extra. I mean, they went and they came. They came. Okay, Alpi Pshat, Eben Ezra, I think, says that it means that as soon as they came back, they immediately reported to Moshe and to their congregation. Not that they first went to relax from the trip, but whatever. The pasuk is making a hekesh between their going and their coming. They went and they came. They're going, meaning... No, but that's what it means. Just like when they came back with a bad intention, because that's what they wound up doing, they started speaking badly about the land to the Jewish people. So even when they went, they already had a bad intention also. So Rashi says, when they were going, they already had bad intentions in mind. So which gets into the question, so what Rashi says on the pasuk, so what does that mean? So either different Mephoshim talk about the possibilities, maybe Moshe thought they were Kshedim, but really they weren't. Maybe they were Kshedim when Moshe appointed them, but as soon as they started leaving, they already went bad. Various possibilities. The Rebbe talks about it in a Sicha and explains, not necessarily, they didn't necessarily go bad to begin with, as in becoming Rishayim and saying we're going to speak badly against Israel. What actually happened was the Eitza that we're talking about was that they came up with the idea we're independent contractors, so to speak. Not Moshe was sending them. The expression is Moshe wants them just to reconnoiter Eretz Israel. Check out, he says over there, you know, what are the cities look like, what does the fruit look like, etc. Their job is to gather the facts. They started thinking of themselves as soon as they left. They already started thinking of themselves as not, our job is not just to report the facts, our job is to give opinions. That was the beginning of their mistake. And that's why also the Rebbe explains in that Sicha, that's why Moshe already had to daven, and we learned yesterday that Moshe had to daven for Yeshua, Ko Yeshua, Chamatas Meraglim, Kolei has to daven that I should be saved from the eighth of the Meraglim, not necessarily the bad eighth, so they weren't necessarily bad at that point, but already the idea that they're thinking of themselves as we have our own opinion to report, instead of just being pure shluchim, just reporting the fact, that was already the eighth that Kolei and Yeshua had to be spared from.
But Moshe was the leader, wasn't he responsibility to tell them.
So he told them. He told them that their job is just to gather the facts.
And
but they took it in the way that they should. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Plus it continues. By Safrul by Yom Rubon, it says they told them over and they said we came to the land. It had Zavas full of advash, here's the fruit. In the next plus it continues, Ephes Kiaza on. However the people are powerful, etc. So Amr Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Yechanan says, why did they Ephes means however. The people are strong. So why did they begin by describing that the land is very fertile? If they're trying to speak bad about it, well, why are they starting with good? Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Mishum Rameir. So Rabbi Yechanan says in the name of Rameir, and the simon of you, Emes Levadai, Levia, is a simon, the second word is really supposed to be Levadai. This is three statements that we have in our Masechta that Rabbi Yechanan said in the name of Rameir. This one, another one on Dachman Beis, and another one on Dachman Vav. That's the sin for them. Emes for the one that we're going to say over here. Lochdoi, not Lochadei, Lochdoi for an expression over there on Daphne Beis about Goliath, and Levia about the importance of giving Levia to a traveler. So he says, Kol Loshen Hara she'en bread bar Emes b'tchilosei, any Loshen Hara that does not have a bit of truth at the beginning, ein miskayim v'sofo, will not last at the end. So in order for their sheker to be accepted, they had to start with a little Emes about the land. And actually, Marsha points out, even within what each of the things they're saying, they start with MS and they continue with Sheker. They start by saying the land is Zavas Kol Vash. That's true. But then they continue, Vizepiria, this that we brought back, and it's true. What did they bring back? We talked yesterday. They brought back a cluster of grapes, a pomegranate, and a fig. Now, there's seven minimum of Israel. Why didn't they bring back wheat or barley? He says, because grain and oil are the basics that people need for day-to-day living. So the doctor, they didn't bring those back, Marsha says, as if to claim Eretz Yisrael doesn't have those things. Fruit it has, fine, but you can't live on fruit. You need grain, you need oil. So they tried to claim that Eretz Yisrael doesn't have those things. That was already a lie. Similarly, when they continue with about the people, Ephes Kiazam, it's true, they're powerful people, but when they say, we saw the giants over there, that's false. We learned yesterday only Kolev went to Hebron, which is where the giants are. The rest of them didn't. So each detail that they mention, there's MS and then there's Sheker. Well, the thing is, by Yaf Kolev, it's on Moshe. It says, Kolev quieted the people to Moshe. What is that word? The word vayahas. Amar Rav Asher sisan b'dvarim. The word vayahas is related to the word hasata, which means like trying to convince somebody, trying to sort of trick somebody into something. What does that mean? What happened? Pasach Yeshua to Kamishtoi. Yeshua started trying to speak. The Meraglim are saying that it's not such a good land or whatever that it doesn't have grain and oil and whatever. The Meraglim are claiming it's like a powerful people, so we're not going to be able to conquer. Yeshua tried to start saying something. Amrilei, the people quieted him down. They said, Dein Rosh Ketia Yamalo, should this cut-off head speak? What do you mean cut-off head? There's many different explanations about it. Rashi says it means he has no sons. The Gemara in Megillah explains, based on Pesukim and Divrei Hayamim, Yeshua had daughters but not sons. Therefore, he doesn't have any stake in the matter, therefore, basically. So on the one hand, it means he doesn't have sons who are going to be in danger in the battles in Eretz Yisrael. It also includes, therefore, they thought he's not going to be getting an inheritance in Eretz Yisrael at all. This is long before B'nai Slavsad, so nobody knew that girls are going to inherit when there's no boys. So that's one idea of it, is therefore, as they said, hello, therefore they argued, you have nothing to do with this. You shouldn't be talking.
Wasn't Yeshua...
There was many other explanations of this Rosh Ketiyah. Among them are actually that Rosh Ketiyah means right now you're the head of a Shevet, of Shevet Ephraim. You have aspirations to be the leader of the whole Jewish people after Moshe passes away. That's why you want us to go into Eretz Yisrael so you can be the leader. But we don't want to listen to you. We don't want to listen to you. Then you're a negeva dover. You have an agenda over here. You have ulterior motives. There's a vast number of other explanations. Among the other ones is Marsha says Rosh Ketiyah, the letter Yud. We learned yesterday that Moshe added a Yud to Yeshua's name to daven Kol Yeshiach Hametzas Meraglim. The Meraglim are making fun of that. That extra Yud doesn't really belong to your name. You weren't sent by Hashem, which would be implied by the Yud. You were sent by the Jewish people, by Moshe Rabbeinu, just like the rest of us. You're no more special than the rest of us. You have no right to it. Whatever it is, so... Well, but that's the point. Okay, but they're arguing against him. Omar, so now Kolev thought to himself, Imishteina, so if I start speaking up and also try to defend Eretz Yisrael, Amri Bimil, so the Chasmin Leiden, they're going to speak up against me also and make me be quiet. So I have to find a stratagem, I have to find a way to trick them into thinking that I agree so that I can...
Throwing
wait, it's not... When you have to, he has to get out the point that he has to say. What would they say against him? Then Yoda says, one thing they could argue against him is, you know what, hey, Kolev, you went to Hebron by yourself. You know why you went there? Not to daven by the Maros of Machpelah like you claim. You went to bribe from the giants over there, so that way you're going to try, they bribed you into that. You'll come back and say, yes, it's a good land, let's go in right away, and we'll walk right into the giant trap over there, and they'll kill us. So therefore, so Kolev knew he can't...
They're sitting
in the crate of it. Basically, so he's thinking they might say that. So therefore, instead, Omar, he says to them, B'chizubel v'ad also one of Ben Amram. Is this the only thing that Ben Amram did for us? So everybody thought that he wants to say something derogatory against Moshe Rabbeinu. Ishtiku, so therefore they quieted down. And in fact, part of it is the very fact that he called him Ben Amram. Ben Amram is sort of a derogatory way, as if like he's not Moshe, he's not like the great person Moshe, but he's just Ben Amram. So calling him Ben Amram itself is, having said that, most of the Mefarshim explain it that way. The Rebbe actually points out in the Sicha a little bit the other way around, though, that Ben Amram is more of a complimentary thing because he can't call it, under the circumstances, he doesn't just want to call him Moshe, because that would be disrespectful to call your Rebbe by his name. It's in today's Rambam, Shlosha Prakim. To call him Rabbeinu Moshe, that defeats the whole purpose. He's trying to make them think that he wants to say something derogatory. So, blessed be that he uses the word Ben Amram, where he means it in a more positive sense. It's better calling him Ben Amram than just calling him Moshe. Anyway,
giving them too much importance.
Yeah. So, ishtiku, so they all quieted down to hear what the colleague has to say. Amalahu, he says, look, it's Yonim of Mitzrayim, the Karolonim of Sayyam, Rechelonim of Hamon, he took us out of Mitzrayim, he tore open the, and no, Moshe Rabbeinu we're talking about, did it all in the Shlichus for us. He took us out of Mitzrayim, he split the sea for us, he gave us the mon to eat. So now, even if he says we have to make ladders and climb up to heaven, meaning even if it's something completely beyond Derech HaTeva, shouldn't we listen to him? And that, thus he continues, we will definitely go up and conquer it. Meaning not just we'll go up to Eretz Yisrael, we'll go up even if it involves climbing up to heaven. If Moshe says we should do it, we can trust him already. We know what he's able to accomplish already. So that was Kalev. Pasuk continues. The people who came up with Kalev, the other 10 meraglim, said, "No, we're not going to be able to conquer the land because they're stronger than us." So, Amar Rav Chanina bar Papa, Dava Gadol did the Meraglim ba'Eitz HaShoah. The Meraglim said a tremendous statement at that point. Namely, when they said, Kichazakum mimenu, al tikum mimenu, ela mimenu. The word mimenu has a double meaning. It can mean than us. It can also mean than him. So don't read the pasuk as meaning that they're saying the nations in Eretz Canaan are stronger than us, but they're stronger than him. Kavyachal afilu balabayis. This is what you asked about yesterday. You actually mentioned it yesterday. Yes. Kavyachal afilu balabayis. Any yachal lohitzi kalim misham. Kavyachal even the balabayis Hashem cannot remove his kalim from there. So what does this mean? So a number of things about this. First of all, the two ways of saying mimenu on the face of it are the same thing. What kind of altikri? So Rashi says actually we shouldn't do altikri over here. There's no difference in pronunciation between the two meanings of mimenu. So Evan Ezra at the beginning of Chumash Shmos points out that there is a difference in soda in that between Bnei Eretz Yisrael and Bnei Babel. Bnei Eretz Yisrael have a dagish in the noon regardless, which is how we have it in all Chumashim. Bnei Babel, which is where the Gemara was written, had a dagish when it means the singular, when it means then him, and no dagish when it means the plural. So therefore, I'll take you mimenu elamimenu, meaning from him, which would have a dagish.
Why did it have a dagish when it's plural?
I don't know if there's a reason off the dick joke. I didn't quite follow it. But whatever. No, it's on the contrary. The dagish is on a singular. But when it's singular, because then it stands for minhu, whatever. Anyway, there's other explanations as well. Shita Mukabeth is bringing the girsa that not mimenu, but miminoi. They're claiming that the nations are stronger than the Eibishter's right hand. And Balaturim points out one other interesting thing about it. All the letters of mimenu are double letters. Mem is spelled mem-mem. Nun is spelled nun, or vav, nun. And vav is spelled vav, vav. So the word mimenu itself, so to speak, has a double meaning there. They're saying they're stronger than us, but they're also implying or within that they're stronger than Eibishter. So what do we mean in the Safilu Balabayis and Yachal HaHetzikei L'Mishon? So on one level, it is a blasphemous statement. But also, there's the idea, Al-Pichsidus, there's the idea that the whole reason why they were against going in there to Israel in the first place is because they felt the Gashmias of Israel was going to overwhelm them. They need to be living a Ruchniistic life in the desert. So they're arguing that the sparks of Kedusha, the Tzitzis of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Canaan, are so deeply embedded that Kabyachal, even the Eibishter, can't get them out. Now, there's also, I think Marshall talks about that they also mean to imply. Okay, but that's their way of looking at it. That you know what we're you know, who, but on the other hand, who is it up to extract them? Us, and we're not going to be able to do it. So then, Kavyachal, even the Balabayis can't accomplish it. Also, Balabayis in this sense doesn't necessarily mean the Eibishter. I think also in that Sikha, in Chelik Dalet, the Rebbe also talks about the idea that Balabayis can mean a tzaddik. Even a tzaddik is not going to, even the greatest tzaddik is going to get so corrupted by the environment that he's not going to be able to get anything out of there. There's also an idea, what was I just going to say, that Eini Yochel Lohotzi Kelev Misham, so to speak, like the Eibishter put those nations there, Kavyachal, even he is not going to be able to expel them from there now. So what happened as a punishment for that, it ended up, the Yidden ended up going in there, and they did end up getting expelled hundreds of years later, to show that, yes, the Eibishter does control things over there. No, but they didn't listen to them, and so it had an effect for future generations, as the Gemara is going to say in a few lines.
What do you think about the Dibra Maragli? Doesn't it sound like it's a positive thing?
No, well, not necessarily, no. I mean, Dibra Gadol just means a great, powerful statement they made.
It's evil, it's still very powerful.
It's a very, yeah. Okay. They continued, Eretz Echelet Yeshver, it's a land that eats up its inhabitants. So what happened? Dorash Rava, Omar Kosh Bocha, Ani Chashavti L'Toyva. I intended it. Wait, I intended it for good. No, they did see that people are dying as they're going in out. But Hashem says, I meant it for good. I meant it for a positive purpose. Vehem Kosh V'Lura, the Meraglim have taken it the wrong way. Namely, Ani Chashavti L'Toyva, D'Chol Heichad D'Motu Mes Chashiva Didhu. That wherever the Meraglim traveled in Eretz Yisrael, they traveled the whole length of it, the whole length and breadth of Eretz Yisrael. Wherever they traveled in that area, the Eibishter arranged that one of the important people of that area died. Kiyechad D'Nitzudu V'Lelisha L'Rav. That's right. This way, everybody's occupied with the Levaya and the mourning and everything, and they don't have the head to they don't have the free time to start asking about, hey, what are these strangers doing traveling among us? That was done on purpose. That way the Meraglim will be safer. But the Meraglim took it the wrong way to claim that Eretz Yisrael is a dangerous land. The Ikadamri, another version of what happened, it's not in every place there was a different choshev person, but rather Eiv Nochnafshe, it was Eiv passed away at that time. The Itridu, Kolayama Vesvedus, everybody is busy with the hesped for him, because Eiv, the famous tzaddik, and especially also Rashi says that his chos had been protesting them all this time. In fact, later on, Rashi quotes that the Kalev and Yeshua said, we're still trying to convince the people that we can do this, that they don't be afraid of what the other 10 Meraglim are saying. They say, their shadow has left them. What is their shadow? Their protection. Eiv is dead. They don't have a tzaddik to protect them anymore. Therefore, we have nothing to worry about. We should be able to conquer them. So that Eiv died at that point, and everybody is busy with the hesped for him, but the Meraglim took it in the wrong way, as if to say, like, wherever we go, we hear people dying. Which Ben Yoyada points out, actually, why do we say, so, okay, you could argue about how the Meraglim is supposed to know, maybe Taka, I mean, you have people dying, maybe in fact it means that it's a dangerous place. No, but if they see the important people are dying, usually if you have an epidemic, for example, who tends to get affected? The lower classes, the people who live in unsanitary environments and low-lying, and not the rich, important people who live in the better quality places or whatever. If they see that Gavka, they're dying, they should have realized that the Eidrus are planning it for their benefit. They did.
It should have been a message to them.
Sure, yeah.
They were the head of the people.
Mm, okay, maybe.
They did that before their time, just in order for the
maybe, or maybe the Amish to arrange the joint. It doesn't really matter. Yeah. That's the point. So they thought it for bad. They thought that's a land that devours and kills its inhabitants. Pasuk continues, they said, we were in our own eyes like grasshoppers, and so we were in their eyes. So Amar Masharshi, Meraglim Shachri, but the Meraglim at this point were liars. Because okay, I can understand them saying we felt like grasshoppers, we felt tiny and insignificant in our own eyes. How could they know that we looked to the Knanim like grasshoppers, like nothing? How do they know what the Knanim are thinking? So that must be a lie. However, the Gemara says Veloihi, actually that's not so. This particular detail was truth. Because Kiabu Mavri Aveli, it was the truth. They were looking at them as grasshoppers. Why? Kiabu Mavri Aveli, Tusi Haziabu Mavri, because we just said there was Avelis all over the country for the important people, for Eiv as the case may be. So when they were serving the Suda Sabra, the first meal to the Avelim, they would serve them under the trees. V'chi chazinu, so when the Meraglim would see the people get it coming out there for their picnics, for their Suda Sabra under the trees, they were afraid. Silichu yasu bilani, they would go and climb up and hide in the trees. Shami the Tamri, and they would overhear the Knanim, the giant, saying, "Chazinu inshi didomu l'kamsi bilani." We see little people that look like grasshoppers running around in the trees. So yes, therefore they heard the Meraglim actually say that they look like grasshoppers. Tosfos Chance brings from a medrash that actually that there was a daughter of one of these giants who went into a farmer's orchard and picked a pomegranate and started eating it and threw away the peel. So one of the Meraglim climbs into the peel to hide from her. That shows how what we said yesterday, how huge the fruit was. Then afterwards, she's afraid her father is going to find the peel and find that she's been taking fruit from the orchard without permission. So she takes the peel with the Meraglim still inside and throws it outside the orchard, and that way he's able to escape. But yeah, so we see that indeed when they said that we look like grasshoppers in their eyes, that thought is truthful. Continues. The entire congregation lifted up their voice and started crying loudly. That day was Erev Tishabav. That night was the night of Tishabav. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hein Bochu B'chiyah Shochinam, they cried a cry for nothing. I will make it that they're going to end up crying for generations. Because it's about Tisha B'Av, the two Korbanos and the other tragedies. Yeah. Well, it was Erev Tisha B'Av when they came back. The night, that night was the night of Tisha B'Av. The night between the 8th and 9th and the 9th above. Pasuk continues, and Mephoshim discussed over here, is that, are we saying that that the Churban was already predestined anyhow, and now the Eved should just determine the date when it's going to be, or is it, without this, there wouldn't have been a Churban B'chlal? And in fact, there are Pesukim and Tillim, and Kapitul Kuvav, that imply, that actually say, that as a result of the Chetam Aglam, by Yisa Yod Elohim Lahapaloysim Bagoyim, Lahapaloysim Amidro, Lahapalzaram Bagoyim, Lahapalzaram Bagoyim, that yes, as a result of the Chetam Egel, the Eved should then determine that there's going to be a Golos, and there's going to be a scattering of the, as a result of that, the Eved should determine that not only they're going to hold that generation is all going to die in the desert, but the future generations are going to be scattered all over in Golos.
It's interesting because even the Chetam of the Egel did not accomplish that.
So actually, Rashi mentions that Hashem sort of had all this in mind already from the Chetam Egel, but he just left it hanging. Yeah, that it included as well, but that it only came into fruition with the Chetam and Aglam. every Puranos has something they have on it. Pause it continues. A few psukim later, the entire congregation was about ready to stone them on the pshat. So the pshat is them means Yeshua and Kalev. But the same pause it continues. The chavod Hashem nidu ba'oyel moed. The glory of Hashem appeared in oyel moed. So what's the connection? Amar Rav Chiya Abba Malamet Shenot Wabonim Bezokum Klapei Ma'ale. It means they didn't just intend to stone Yeshua and Kalev. They actually picked up stones and threw them up at the Eidishter. Now what does that mean? So the Maharal talks about, that doesn't literally mean, I mean, obviously they're not going to be so childish as to think they can throw rocks at the Eidishter. It means they were about ready to throw rocks at Moshe and Aaron. And Moshe and Aaron, being the Eved's Shluchim, is the equivalent of as if they're throwing stones at Eved's Shluchim. Then Yoda talks about a couple of other possibilities. One of them is that they're saying, also the Maharal talks about maybe they didn't actually stone them, but since they were thinking of it, then it's considered as if they did. And then Yoda talks about a couple of possibilities. He says one idea is that they were throwing up stones, literally, but not as if to attack Hashem, Chas V'Shalom, but as if to say, look, Hashem, why do you want us to come into Eretz Yisrael so we can build a permanent Beis Mikdash out of stone rather than the temporary Mishkan we have now? Very well, you want stones? Here's some stones. He says that's still a very chutzpahdik thing for them to do. So he says another possibility that maybe what they intended to symbolize by it is it takes effort to throw a stone up, but then it falls down very easily. So they're implying it's going to take a tremendous effort for us to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael and maintain our high level, whereas to fall down is very easy, like a stone falling. So therefore, we don't want to be involved in the whole Messiah. Okay. Pasuk continues later on. By Yamusu Hanashim Maitiyah gave us the Eretz Yisrael b'Magefa. The people, these ten meraglim who had spoken out evil against Eretz Yisrael, died in a plague. Guys, we're learning over here. What kind of plague? Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Melamed Shemesu Misa Mishuna. When it says Bamagefa, so Rashi says we learn from Bamagefa. It doesn't just mean, hey, guys, we're trying to learn over here. Bimagefa would mean in a plague. Bamagefa means in the plague. So some kind of special plague. Some kind of special punishment. Tosfos says that actually we have a different way of learning it. The pasuk says, "Vayimusu anoshim b'tiyah did a bamagefa means in the plague." So in other words, some specific kind of plague, not just that they died, with some specific kind of punishment. Tosfos says we have a different way of learning it. The pasuk says, "The b'tiyah give us aretz ra'ah, those who spoke out evil against the land died bamagefa." We darshan the word ra'ah as referring to bamagefa. Ra'ah bamagefa was an evil kind of plague. So what was it? So mishum mishuna, an unnatural kind of death. Amar Rav Chanina bar Papa, Dorosh Rav Shila Ish Kvar Tamarta, so Rav Shila Ish Kvar Tamarta Darshin, that what happened was, Malamet Shnishtabrib L'Shoinam, that their tongue grew extra long, the Nafal Al Tiburam, it hung down all the way until their belly button, until their navel, V'hoyu Teloim Yotis M'L'Shoinam V'Nechnasis B'Tiburam, U'M'Tiburam V'Nechnasis B'L'Shoinam. So worms were coming out of their tongues and going into their navel and coming out of their navel and going into their tongue. Why one idea that Mephoshim talk about is their tongues, because that's what they spoke Lashon Hara with, and the navel, because that's the center of the body, representing Eretz Yisrael, which is the center of the civilized world. So therefore, they spoke Lashon Hara against Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, those two things go together. And why worms? One idea is also before we talk about that worms are very weak creatures, but they have a tremendous power to chew things up. That's how they accomplish anything, is by chewing. So their power is in their mouth. The Meraglim misused their mouth, therefore they deserve to be punished with worms. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar Askara Meis. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says more simply that no, they didn't die like that. They died from Askara. Askara we've talked about Askara before. It's diphtheria or some other kind of throat disease. It's very painful. The Gemara mentions in Brachas that's the most painful kind of death. But whatever it is, it basically cuts off the person's air. Whatever. Okay. Now that we're finished with the Meraglim, now back to the crossing of the Yarden and the setting up the stones. Back to the Braisa, back to that Perek of Tosefta that we've been quoting off and on. The Braisa continues, "V'chivet sh'olah ha'achran should be Yisrael min ha'yarden." Once the last Jew left the Yarden to cross over into Eretz Yisrael, chazru mayim l'makayim, and the water came back to and continued flowing like it was. Shenem v'vayhi ba loisa, ka loisa koinim noisa aron b'yis Hashem b'techa Yarden, when the koinim were carrying the aron of Hashem, got up from out of the Yarden, nitku kapos ragla koinim al-charova, the koinim's feet had just touched the dry land, that had just moved and touched the dry land, by Yeshua Mea Yadin Lamakaimam, the water of the Yadin returned to its place, by Yochel Kitmel Shosham, Al Kogadosim, and it continued like it always had been before, flowing through it, just flowing between its banks. Or even overflowing its banks, because it was springtime and there was a lot of snow melt in there. So, what happened? When we said the Kohenim left, we don't mean that they crossed over with the rest of the Jewish people and now they walked out on the west side of the Yadin. We mean they. What happened originally? We said before yesterday when we started discussing it that they stepped in on the east side of the Yarden, and all of a sudden the water split. They're standing there as all the Jewish people are crossing. Now, when they go back, they step back. They take one step back onto the dry land on the east side of the Yarden, on Eivre Yarden. It actually says we see from the order of the Pesukim that's how it was. But wait, why was that? Because we're going to see what happened. So, Nimsa Oren Venosa Vakonim Tzadechot, Yisrael Tzadechot. So, right now, you have the Oren and the Konim who are carrying it on one side of the river, and the rest of the people are on the other side. How are the Konim going to get across? Nosa Oren Es Noisa V'Obra. The Oren picked up those who are carrying it and flew over. That was exactly why. The Ebishtha wanted to show the Jewish people that Oren has that property, that Noisa Es Noisa, that's not, the Konim don't have to carry the Oren. The Oren actually carries those who are carrying it. So therefore, now the Ebishtha showed that as an open nest. They flew over the river. The Aron flew them over, and they rejoined everybody else on the west side.
So they were holding to the Aron.
Yeah, they're holding on to the poles of Aron. The Aldavar then Nanash Uzza for this kind of thing, for not realizing this, Uzza was punished. What happened in the Haftarah of Shmini from Shmuel Beis describes how after 20 years that the Aron had been in Kiryas Yearim, David wanted to bring it to Yerushalayim. So he has them take it from Avinadav's house. He has two of Avinadav's sons, Uzziah and Achia, walking together with it, and he puts it on a wagon. Which actually the Gemara is going to say in a minute that was a mistake. As they're walking, as the oxen are pulling the wagon and going, Uzziah all of a sudden is afraid that the oxen are swaying or whatever. The Aron looks like it's about to slip off. He reaches out his hand to steady it, and he dies. Instant death. And David is very upset. What am I going to do now? He sends it off to base Obed Edom Agiti, with Levi, who lived in that area. Obed Edom takes exceptional care of it. The Gemara mentions at the end of Brachos that the Rashi mentions it.
Giti
just means he lived in Gath at some point. He lived in Gath, but he was a Levi. Yeah. He lived among the Levi in several times in Divrei Yom. What happened was, the Gemara explains at the end of Barachas, based on Sukkim from Divrei Yomim, that his wife and the wives, he had at that point eight sons. All of his sons' wives, as well as his own wife, all became pregnant with sextuplets. So all of a sudden, his family grows from 8 to 62. And that was his reward for taking extra good care of the Aron during the 3 months that it was by him. So once David saw that's the situation, okay, so then we don't have to worry about the Aron anymore. As long as we are careful, as long as we're careful with the Kedusha of it, we'll be good. Then he goes and has the Kohenim bring it, and now he has the Kohenim carry it like it's supposed to be, and brought to Yerushalayim.
Uzza didn't know that.
Wait. So Uzza should have known that. That's the point. We're going to say, wait. Uzza should have realized from the story that we just said about the Kohenim flying with the Aron over the Yarden. He should have realized that. So Shanem, the Pasukas Vayavoru and Gordon Kidon, they came until the threshing floor of Kidon. Later on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to explain why it's called that. By Yishlach Uzzah as Yodir Lechaz as Aron, so Uzzah put out his hand to steady the Aron, because he thought that it was about to fall off. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Ebrishter said to him, Uzzah, Think of it. Noisav Nosa, the Oren was able to carry those who carry it, the Kohenim, by the Yardin. Atmele Kol Shekin, how much more so the Oren can carry itself? You're not a Kohen, you're not a Levi, you have no business touching it. So, Vayitra Af Hashem Be'uzah, so it says the Eibishter got angry at Uzzah, Vayakev Shama LaShal, and he struck him down on the Shal. Now, what is Shal? Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lazar, Chad Omer Al Iske Sholu, it means that Eibishter struck him down and killed him because of his forgetfulness, because of this, that he forgot this idea that the Oren carries itself and doesn't need to be steadied by a person. Then he was able to kill
him in a carriage.
So that was what we're going to say in a minute. That was David's mistake. He shouldn't have put it in a carriage. Wait. So Al Iske Sholu, because of this mistake that he made, is why he was killed. The Chad Omer, the other opinion is Shosat Srochav Bafanov, that he did his needs in front of the Oren. Now, usually, Osat Srochav means they went to the bathroom. So what does that mean? He may not have realized that the Oren carries, but he's going to go to that extent. So different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. One of them is when he saw the Oren was about to fall, he panicked so much that he lost control of his bowels. But still, the very fact that he got so they panicked like that was part of the mistake also. Again, he should have realized Oren Noisav is Noisav. Other Mephoshim talk about other possibilities. The Gemara mentions in Bracha, good intentions are not enough. The person needs to learn. The person needs to know. But there's different other possibilities that Mephoshim talk about what this Asat Tzrachav means. One interesting one is it doesn't mean go to the bathroom at all. We say every morning in davening, should also be called Tzarki. What are we thanking the Eibishter for? Shoes. Uzzah was wearing shoes in front of the Oren, not realizing that just like when you're on the Hanabayas, you're not supposed to wear shoes. Shalna Allah Maraglacha. Now, that would be it. So, according to, if we say Sha'al Tzrachav means bathroom, then Rashi explains Shal is Meloshin like dropping off. Yishal Zeisecha. So, it's something that drops out of the bottom. If we say that, it means that he didn't take off his shoes. I'll bet if like Shalna Allah Maraglacha, take off your shoes. And he didn't do that. Other than that, the other possibilities they talk about are that the Gemara talks about in Brachas different dinim about the direction in which you're supposed to go to the bathroom if you're not inside a building. When you're inside a building, when you have a bathroom inside a building like we do, it doesn't matter what direction. But if you're in the outdoors, there's dinim. You're not supposed to be facing towards the direction of the Hanabayas. Similarly over here, it may be that at some point, not necessarily now, if you're outdoors, yes. And like there's a direct line between you and the Hanabayas or something. Yeah, there's dinim about it. Because we learned about it way back when in Brachas. So according to that, when we say Tzrachav Bafanav, may mean that over the years, at some point, Uzzah had been careless about this din, not realizing, again, especially the Oren is in his own house, there may have been times when he got careless about that. And now, so back then, okay, the Eibishter let it slide, Chaviyachol, but now that he actually touched the Oren, then it all came together. Pasuk continues by Yomos Shram Im Aron Halakim, that Uzzah died there meaning next to the Oren Halakim. Amar Yechonon Uzzah Bo'el Olam Haba. Uzzah did end up going to Olam Haba. Shenema Im Aron Halakim, because it says he went with the Oren of Hashem, which means Ma Oren La'olam Chayim, just like the Oren exists forever. It's buried under the Harabayas, but it's there. Af Uzzah Bo'el Olam Haba, the same way Uzzah exists for the future as well. He has Olam Haba.
No,
so that's what Marsha talks about, but the Gemara over here evidently is going according to the opinion that Shalsa Tzrachal Bafanav, which you would think is a very gross disrespect to the Oren, whatever it means, so you would think maybe because of that he lost his chelik and Olam Haba. No, we're saying that now. A different explanation I saw from Rabbi Yashiv Olav HaShalom is that what the Gemara is saying is usually, for example, the Gemara mentions in Megillah that if a person touches the Sefer Torah, if somebody holds the actual parchment of the Sefer Torah, for example, while learning or getting an Aliyah or whatever, he loses the schar of that mitzvah. Nikba Orem B'loy is a mitzvah. If he touches just the actual parchment of the Sefer Torah, let's say while he's getting an Aliyah, as opposed to touching an Atzei Chaim or touching it with a talus or whatever, so he loses the schar of that mitzvah because it's disrespectful to the Torah. So over here, you would think maybe Uzzah lost the course of helping take care of the Oren. Now they touched it. So no, we're saying Bala Olam Haba means he came to Olam Haba with that mitzvah in his hand. That still the Eibishter did credit him for the mitzvah despite his mistake.
The mitzvah of what?
The mitzvah of taking care of the Oren all those years, yeah. Plus, it continues by Yichal to David Alashem Paras Hashem Paras for Uzzah. David was upset that Hashem had broken through Uzzah, and if we call the place Paras Uzzah. What does Yichal mean? Amar Abelazar, Shenishtanu Ponav Kacharora. His face changed like a loaf that's baked on coal. Meaning like his face like shriveled up. Not black actually. In the first time we talk about it, it means like shriveled up. Like deep frown kind of. why? Elamatha by Yichar Hochanami. So what, you're going to say every place in the Torah where it says Yichar means the place of the person's face shriveled up? No, the difference is Hoshan Ksiv Ach, Hochal Ksiv Ach. The difference is usually the expression is by Yichar Ach. That means he got angry at somebody. He got angry. By Yichar, though, here it just says by Yichar the David means he got upset at himself, basically. Now, he didn't get upset at the Amster. He's not challenging the Amster's justice, but he's upset at himself that he caused it to happen, as the Gemara is going to say in a second. And in fact, the Malbim on the Pasuk points out that that's the difference. When it says by Yichar without Af, it means the person is upset at himself. Like by Yichar the Tayin Moed is another example. When it says by Yichar Af, it means he's angry at somebody else. Dorash Rabbah, but Neman Menash David, why was David punished? By having that Uzzah was killed because of him. Mepnish Kodal Dibet Torah Zmirah, because he called the words of Torah a song. Shenema Zmirah, so you look Kacha Babes Megura. He says that in all the places where I was having to hide out and to hide out and to be scared of my enemies, I was always, the Torah was a song to me. It was my source of enjoyment. Wait. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what are you talking about? Divrei Torah shekatzaban atzoyif anecha boiva enenu. Divrei Torah, which are so hard to keep track of, if you even bat your eyes at it, you HaTorah literally means you fold. Like you fold your eyes and you trust for a second, then the enenu, and it's gone. Meaning that Torah is very easily forgotten, behesach hadas. After Kodos and Tzmiros, you're calling it a song, as if it's like something that's so easy to learn, like a song. Or like Marsha says, like you don't have to review it constantly. Like you hear a song a couple of times and that's it, you know it. So I will make you stumble in something that even children know. As the Pasuk says, that B'nei Kahas, Moshe did not give wagons among the wagons that the Nesiim donated in Parshas Nasi. The Pasuk says, because the avodah of the holy things is upon them, but cost if you so, they have to carry it on their shoulders, not on wagons. So therefore the Eibishter made him forget that, and that's why the Aron ended up on a wagon. So a number of authorities talk about what exactly is the problem with calling the Torah Zmiros. There's various explanations of the difference between Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat Peh. The other day in Tanya, we had the Alpha Debbie discussed it. I'll pick Sidus. But the idea is that calling the Torah Zmiros reflects the idea that that one little detail of the Torah, one little detail of Halacha, is the source for a tremendous amount of Olam Hazeh. So therefore, when David is being persecuted and like he's enjoying very little of Olam Hazeh, it helps him. It helps cheer him up, thinking, you know what? The whole Olam Hazeh over here all depends on one little detail of the Torah. In that sense, it's a mitzvah, it's a song. The Eibishter is telling him, though, it's a praise to the Eibishter that his chokhmah, which is embedded in the Torah. That even one tiny detail of the Eibishter's Chochmah is a source for the all the earth. So that's a praise. But the Gemara is saying, the Eibishter says to him, very nice, but that's only the Chitzonius of Torah. You, on your level, should be talking about the Pnimius of Torah, not just focusing on the Chitzonius of it. So what happens, he may forget, without it, I mean, it's swags over there. Forgetting is associated with Chitzonius. You only forget things that are external to you. You don't forget things that are internal to you. And number two, what specific thing did he forget? The thing that the idea that the Kohenim have to carry the Oren on their shoulders. What does the shoulder do? It connects the front and back of a person, reflecting this idea, therefore, that David was focusing on the Chitzonius, like on the back aspect of the Torah rather than the Pnimius, the front aspect. And the Tzemach Tzedek in Derech Mitzvah adds also that when the Kohenim are carrying the Oren, they're supposed to be facing it. You have four Kohenim, let's say, carrying the Oren. It's not two, you have two in front, two in back. It's not the two in front are walking with their backs to the Oren. All four of them are walking with their faces to the Oren. So two of them are walking forward and two of them are walking backward. So therefore, also, the idea of carrying it on the shoulders represents the idea of pure Pnim, of a pure Pnimius. Facing it, whereas instead on the shoulder, you carry it on your shoulder, but you're facing it. So you have the Oren is here, and you have one person standing here, and one person standing here. Yeah. Or two people, whatever, and however it is, yeah. So therefore, so all that is associated, and that's why he was made to forget that particular day.
So today we're holding the Torah on our backwards, in other words. We're looking not at the Torah, we're looking forward.
Okay, but we're holding it in our arms, you know. I mean, we're not carrying it on poles like they are right now. Okay. You asked your Bagalta, where David brought it on a wagon. But that was his mistake. That was his mistake. Since we're talking about the Oren being moved from place to place, and also about people's mistake in not treating it with the proper derech eretz, like Uzzah, who still tried to grab it, thinking it's going to fall, not realizing, so the Gemara digresses yet again to talk about another case where such a thing happened. after the, going back a few years, after the Aryan had been brought back by the, had been sent back by the Plishtim, after all the disasters they suffered, after they captured it, etc. So they sent it back also on a wagon. So okay, they're not held at fault for that. They're goyim. They don't know better. But so they sent it back on a wagon. The wagon goes straight to Beit Shemesh, a Jewish city. It goes over there to somebody's field and stops over there. The pasuk says the people it says were very happy to see it. But the pasuk says, "Vayach ba'anshe Beit Shemesh." The Eved just struck and killed the people among the people of Beit Shemesh. Ki ro ba'aroin ha'alekim, because they saw the aroin. So what's the problem? Shem the ro vayach, just because they saw the aroin, the Eved just struck them. So Rabbi Bo and Rabbi Lazar argue what exactly was the problem. What did they do wrong? One of them says it was the harvest, the pasuk says. They continued harvesting and bowing. In other words, they didn't stop their work out of the covet of the Aryan. They said, okay, you know, we'll harvest, we'll bow, like they're treating it as a casual thing. And the other one says it's not just they did that. They spoke against the Aryan. They said, "Man amrich laha de imrius." Who got you angry in the first place? That you got angry, and then like you didn't even bother saving yourself from being captured by the Plishtim. Uman osal loch the Ephites, and who now came and calmed you down, and then talked you down from it, that you were now appeased, and now you're coming back to us, like as if they're saying, like, they're, you know, you're like what are you exactly? You know, first you're angry and you go away and you don't want to be by us, and you're coming like so they're talking in a disrespectful way about the Aryan. So the pasuk says, "Vayach ba'am shivim ish chamishim elafish." Here it says "vachamishim." The pasuk actually says without the vav, and that's actually the deal the Gemara is trying to make. The pasuk says that Abishter struck and killed among the people 70 people, 50,000 people. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean 50,000 and 70, because then the expression would be chamishim elaf shivim ish. It wouldn't put shivim first. So Rabbi Bo and Rabbi Lazar, argue what it means. Chad amah shivim nishayu. One says it means 70 people were killed. V'chol echad v'echad shakud kachamishim elef. But every one of those 70 was so great, he was the equivalent of 50,000 regular people. V'chad amah chamishim elef hayu. The other opinion says it was 50,000 people were killed in this plague. V'chol echad v'echad shakud kachamishim Sanhedrin. Every one of them was the equivalent of the, in greatness of the 70 members of the Sanhedrin. So that's what it means. 70 men, 50,000 men. The Targum Yonasan said gives another possibility. That means 70 people from the Sanhedrin and 50,000 from the people at large.
Who were these people?
Different people. In other words, either people in Beit Shemesh itself, who disrespected the Aryan, as we just said, or people at least in the immediately surrounding area. And before I can talk about, I mean, for one thing, what's the Abish is so upset that he sends such a terrible plague is the Aryan had been by the Plishtim for 7 months. And the Plishtim finally had to take the initiative to return it. During all those 7 months, none of the Yidden bothered to try and bribe the Plishtim to get to fight with whatever it is, go on the Siddur Nefesh to try and get it back. Like, okay, if I pushed a big deal. That was the problem. Continues the Gemara. Now getting back to when David successfully brought the Aron to Yerushalayim. So after Uzzah was killed, we said he sent it off to base Obed-Edom Agiti. It stayed there for 3 months. They wished to bench Obed-Edom and his whole family. So now David tried again, and this time he was successful. This time he had Kohenim carrying it like it's supposed to be. So the pasuk says, "Vayhi kitzadu noite Aron Hashem shisha tzadim." It says when the Kohenim were carrying the Aron of Hashem had walked 6 steps. Vayizbach shor amuri. Then David brought as a korban, remember this is before the Smith is built, so korbanos could be brought anywhere, he brought as a korban an ox and a fatted animal. Muri means, shur just means an ordinary ox, muri means a fatted ox.
Meloshin?
Meloshin hamra, meloshin stuffing an animal with food. So every 6 steps, the pasuk is saying that he brought 2 korbanos. But then in Divrei HaYomim, it tells the story differently. It says, Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim. When the pasuk says, when the Eved-Shter assisted the Levim, the Levim, meaning the Kohenim, who are carrying the Aron, meaning again, not as Noisa, that they're able to carry it as if it didn't weigh anything, because the Aron is helping them carry it. So it says, when that happened, it says, Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim. It says that David offered 7 oxen and 7 rams. So what is it? Is it what it says in Malach? Is it what it says in Shmuel? 1 shur and 1 meri? Or was it what it says in Divrei Yomim? 7 oxen and 7 rams.
Maybe both.
But Amar Papa by Shmuel, of course it's both. You're not going to say that one pasuk is wrong. No, what it means is like this. Al-Kol P'si'a shur and meri. Every step that the Kohenim took, David would offer a shur and a meri. Al-Kol Sheish V'Sheish P'si'a. Then for every 6 steps, on every 6th step, Shiva Parim V'Shiva Elim. Then David would bring 7 Parim and 7 Elim. So that's when the pasuk says shisha tzadim is actually referring to the set of korbanos that he brought after. So he brought a korban after every step. But after every step, the Kohanim take a step. David was so happy that we're another step closer to where I want to, where the Aron is supposed to be in Yerushalayim, that he was offering two Karbanos. Every 6 steps of the Kohanim, he would offer 14 Karbanos, Shiva Parim v'Shivayim. Okay, they had enough animals. I mean, you know what? I mean, generations later, you have a king of Moab who says every year you have to give tribute to King Ahav, I think it was, 100,000 lambs. You had by the Chanukah Tabayis, they brought 120,000 Karbanos. They had. Okay, the problem is, Amalei Rav Chisda, in Ken, Milei says, Kol Eretz Yisrael, Bamos. If you're going to do that, then the entire Eretz Yisrael is going to be filled with Bamos, with Mizdechos. If every single step they brought a Karban, then the whole road is going to be non-stop Mizdechos. And what's the problem with that? Different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities, including one interesting one based on, I forget who says this, that a Mizbeach that's built for the honor of the Eibishter, let's say it was a bummer in this case, even after the Mishmish is built, you're not allowed to tear it down.
And you cannot use it.
You can't use it because you can't bring Karbanos outside the Mishmish, but you can't tear it down either because it was originally made for the Lashem Shemayim. So therefore, if all Eretz Yisrael now, if the whole road from Obed Edom Agiti's house until Yerushalayim is all covered with bummers, then that means you're like making a tzakala. I wasn't sure it was. Whatever the point is, it's far enough that you're making a tzakala. If anybody destroys even one of these bummers, they're going to be over. You can't do that.
So what happens?
So the El Amar of Chisda. So Rav Chisda said, no, that's not how it worked. I'll call Sheish B'Sheish P'siyat Shur Mari. Every 6 steps that the Kohanim took, David would bring one Shur and one Mari. I'll call Shisha Sdorim, Shal Sheish P'siyat. Every 6 steps, meaning every 36 steps, he would bring Shiva Parim and Shiva Elim. So that disposed to the problem. Then you don't have the bummers quite so close together. And in fact, not only that, I mean, you know, within a short time, everybody would have forgotten the exact locations where each Shoda Marie was brought. So fine, you know, you can use all the land or whatever, not to worry that particular spot at Kedusha, because it wasn't necessarily one of the places. Okay, but no, but the point is, in other words, like this, if it was every single step, then every single step on the way has Kedusha, and you can't use it for mundane purposes. If it's only every 6, okay, but do you know which one was the 6, and you know, yeah. Okay. One last thing, we have to ask, in Divya Yomim, when it tells the story, it calls the place where Uzzah was killed Godin Kidon. In Melachim, in Shlefer Shmuel, it calls it Godin Nochon. So what was the name of it? Kidon or Nochon? First it was Kidon, later it was Nachon. Kidon means a spear. So first it was a dangerous place because Uzzah was killed over there.
Kidon means a spear.
Yeah. So first it was a dangerous place because Uzzah got killed. Later on, after what happened, that the Aron was by Obed Edom and the Eibishter benched Obed Edom, so there then it was Nachon. Then it was fixed up correctly. Now it became that Obed Edom did the right thing. He prepared his house. He made it a proper place for the Aron, and therefore he was benched. So that's Rashi's first explanation. Then Rashi brings another possibility the other way around, that the Gersa should be the other way around. But Chilam Nochon of the Safe Kidron. Gordon Nochon, Rashi says, would actually be Gordon Alav Nahayavusi. This is the place where later on the Beis HaMikdash is built. Remember, this is before the Beis HaMikdash is built. David is bringing the Aron to a temporary tent in Yerushalayim until the Beis HaMikdash is built. And at that point, the pastors, he may not have even known the actual site of the Smithish yet. The Pasuk only tells us at the end of Sefer Shmuel that he found the place in Gurun Arab Nahibus. There was a plague, and maybe she told him to go and bring Karbanos over there. Anyway, so what happens then, Rashi says, when they passed by this place, at the time it was called Gur, at the time it was Nochon, because the Smithish is destined to be built, is destined to be set up there, Nochon Meloshon, Gohu Yechon and Ne'er. Later on, it was Kidon. Kidon means destruction, because later on, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Okay, now that we're finished with the digressions, now back to the stones that they set up when they came into Eretz Yisrael, which was our original topic. So far what you have is Shlosha Minei Avonim. There were three sets of stones that they set up. There was one set that Moshe set up on Eber HaYarden in Eretz Moav, where he told them Chumash Devarim. The pasuk says, "Eber HaYarden be'Eretz Moav hoyo Moshe be'Eber Goyim." It says that there Moshe began to explain the Torah. In Parshat Kisal, when it describes the Har Gruzim and Har Evel and the Mizbeach they have to build on Har Evel, it says they should write out all the Torah Bar Hekev, clearly explained in 70 Lashonis, as we said before, and as we'll say soon. So bar, so we make a greater shava between the two words bar. Just like on Har Evel, they had to write out the Torah on the stone, so also Moshe did that in Eber HaYarden. The Echad Sheikhim Yeshua B'Sech HaYarden, the second set of 12 stones is what Yeshua had them set up in the middle of the Yarden. Shenamo Shtei Mesri Avonim Heikim Yeshua B'Sech HaYarden, as opposed to Yeshua set up 12 stones in the Yarden, as we talked about yesterday.
The first was
Moshe, on the other side, Eretz Moav. The second is in the middle of the Yarden. The Echad Sheikhim Gilgal, and then a third one that they set up in Gilgal, those are the ones that we said that they took from the riverbed of the Yarden and brought them to Gilgal and set them up there. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, that Shtei Mesri Avonim Ela Shalachu B'Goyim, but these 12 stones that they took, they set up in Gilgal. And Rashi explains that later on, afterwards, those stones went to one more place. That third set of stones, afterwards, they took it apart in Gilgal and brought those same stones to Abel and built the Mizbeach out of them and wrote the Torah on it. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that there actually were four sets, because the set in Gilgal and the set on Har Abel were two different sets. Marshall says, according to our Gemara, that there were three sets. He says why do there have to be three sets? He says like this: we know there's 13 ikrim of Yiddishkeit that the Rambam set up. Many Rishonim argue with the Rambam on that. In particular, Sefer Ikrim argues and says it's not really 13. They basically are there's three major principles, and then each of those principles has sub principles. The three major principles are: one, that the Eibishter created and runs the world; two, that the Eibishter rewards and punishes; and three, that the Eibishter gave us the Torah. So these three sets of stones correspond to that. Moshe is the one who taught us the Torah. Therefore, the set that he set up in Eber HaYarden represents the basic part of Amunah that the Eibishter gave us the Torah. The ones they set up in the Yarden, where the water was split, that's in Eber HaYarden. Yeah, Moshe didn't go into Eber HaYarden. Yeah. The ones they set up in the Yarden represent the basic idea of Amunah that the Eibishter created and runs the world. So therefore, the Eibishter created nature, and the Eibishter controlled nature and made the river stop flowing. And the ones they set up on Har Evo, which is where they did the brachas and kolos, represents that the Eibishter rewards and punishes, because that's what the brachas and kolos are: a blessing on the people who do the mitzvahs and a curse on those who don't. Turn it up on them. We learn it up right. The case of Tosvi Yisrael the Torah. How did the Jewish people write the Torah on those stones? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Gabe Avonim Kasvor. They wrote it directly on the stone. Now, the point is like this. The Pasuk says that they have to build a Mizbeach and plaster it. Vesad Ta'os and Basid. Sid actually is not really plaster. Sid is lime. You burn chalk and other stones and whatever, you make lime out of it. They use it as mortar and plaster and whatever.
It becomes hard.
Yeah, well, eventually it becomes hard. At first it's soft. Yeah. So the Pasuk says they have to build them as they have to plaster it with the Sid. Then it talks about writing the Torah. And it repeats about the Sadra as Masid, and it says you should write the Torah. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Gabe Avonim Kasvor, they wrote it directly on the stone. You should write on the stone all the words of the Torah. We talked about the other day what it means, all the words. Does it literally mean the whole Torah, every detail? The Ramban says that. Does it just mean the 613 mitzvahs? Does it maybe just mean a summary of the Torah, etc.? It says you should write on the stones, so literally on the stones. And afterwards they plastered it over with this line.
First they wrote.
So according to you, how did the Goyim of that time learn Torah? And the whole idea of writing it is that the Goyim should be able to learn and understand why the Jewish people are coming into Israel, and that they should be accepting the Shevet Mitzvot B'nei Noach. What good does it do if the writing is covered with lime? Rabbi Yehuda answers him. Bina Yisera Nasim Banach Chodesh Baruch Hu. The Eibishter gave them exceptional intelligence. V'shigru Netzirin Shalahem. So they sent their scribes. Netzirin is like the English word notary. The Kilfor Sasid. They peeled off the lime, the Siura, and they copied out the words that they found written underneath them on the stones. So the line was there just to temporarily cover it until the goyim can come and copy it out. And actually, Mephoshim also talk about the idea that this is that the Gemara. Well, so wait. About Zavazen, it's chatem gzadin lever shachas. Because of this, is why the destiny of the goyim was sealed, that they're going to end up in the pit of destruction, meaning in Gehenna. Because they should have learned. Now that they have the Torah, available to them, they should have learned it. They should have at least done the Shevet Mitzvot B'nei Noach. And they didn't learn it. But they have to learn, at least learn the Shabbat Mitzvah and Noach and do that. But okay, so Marashah talks about that maybe this Al-Davaz and Eschat and Zajinim is more according to the Shimon that they wrote on top of the plaster because then it's openly available. Or no, the other way around, he says, that this is according to the Yehuda. According to the Yehuda, that they knew well enough to send their scribes and peel off the plaster, and Benny Ayyada points out, by the way, they had to peel it off carefully so as not to destroy the letters. So they knew all that. And yet they didn't fulfill it. Nischatim dinim lever shachas. Whereas according to Reb Shimon, that there was no such thing. The Torah is written on the plaster. If they want, they're able to come into Eretz Yisrael and read it. And maybe according to Reb Shimon, it's not so much nischatim dinim lever shachas. You can't hold them responsible for the fact that they didn't all come en masse to read it. Whereas if they actually sent their children and took the trouble to copy it out, then already they should have.
They maybe didn't.
No, but that's the point. It was written in 70. No, that's the point. It was written in 70 languages. That's what we said before. It was written in each nation's language, so they could understand it. Yeah, no excuse. Yeah.
What about something from the Amelis, and they translated it as
the Hebrew? So that's the Hebrew was a one-time thing that it was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be as a regular thing that you translate the Torah.
That
the Goyim should at least learn the Shevet Mitzvot Bnei Noach, and maybe more generally that they should know what the Torah is about, and actually, yeah, Maharat Chayyus talks about that's why the Gemara says over here, Omer Shal Oisei Azman, the nations of that time. Maybe ordinarily, yeah, you're not allowed to teach Torah to Goyim, but this is a one-time thing. Having said that, though, on the side over here, it says that actually the word Shal Oisei Azman is actually added by the censors. It's really supposed to be Heichlom to Omer Torah and the Schatim Dinam of the Shachas. Okay. Reb Shimon, Agabi Sid Kasvor, Reb Shimon says, no, they wrote the Torah on top of the plaster, on top of the line. And underneath the whole writing, they wrote the pasuk l'mana sheyivamdu etchem lasis kachol v'gemer. Why are we conquering Eretz Yisrael? Why do we have to destroy all the nations? In order that they should not teach you to do according to all of the bad things that they do. Meaning that they wrote this like at the end of the page, as like to stand out. But this way they want. So Rashi says that this was actually addressed to members of the seven nations who are living outside Eretz Yisrael. Don't worry, we're not coming after you. The only reason we're going after your relatives here in Eretz Yisrael is because we don't want them to teach us their bad ways. You who are living outside Eretz Yisrael, we're not worried about it. If you want to do tshuva, you'll be able to. Your relatives in Eretz Yisrael, no. Once we start conquering, they can't accept Shem Mitzvah Tenech. Joseph has a long discussion about that. They did accept Rachav after all. There's a lot of discussion about possibilities. Because once the Jewish people start conquering, as Rashi says, if the Knanim claim they want to accept Shem Mitzvah Nenech, they're probably only doing it out of fear. They're not doing it sincerely. So what's going to happen? As soon as the fear is over, they're right away going to start trying to corrupt the Jewish people. They're going to go back to the old ways and then have a bad effect on the Jewish people. And that would be a problem. So before they started conquering, yes, that's the famous thing that Yeshua sent them three alternatives. You can fight, you can leave, you can accept Shemin Zin Nayach and subjugation, or you can fight. And the Gilgashim left, and the Yevonim played a trick, and then everybody else fought. But once they started conquering, then they're not going to, then it's too late already. So Tosfos discusses the pros and cons of that. What about Rachav? Okay. Anyway. So from this we see that if these goyim outside Eretz Yisrael, according to Rashi, had done tshuva and accepted the Shem and Mitzvah, they would have accepted them. So that they didn't, therefore. Amar Rav Bashila, my time with Reb Shimon, what's Reb Shimon's reason? Where does he get that the idea that the Torah was written on top of the plaster, as opposed to Reb Yehuda that was written underneath the plaster? Because the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, the nations will be a burning of lime. So the simple meaning of the Pasuk is it means like an intense flame, like when you burn lime, it makes a very hot flame. That'll be the kind of flame that consumes the goyim. But we're darshaning it al iske sid. They're going to be misrefoiced. They're going to be burnt in Gehenim. Why al iske sid? Because of the plaster. I mean, the Torah is clearly written for them on the plaster. Because the Torah is clearly written for them on these stones, on the plaster. Not like Rabbi Yehuda where they have to think to peel off the plaster and read what they need. It's right there in front of their faces. And they didn't bother. They didn't bother accepting the Shem Mitzvah Nenayah. Therefore, they deserve to be burnt in Gehenim. Yeah, it's Shivim Lashon. That's the point, yeah. So therefore, so that shows that it was written on top of the plaster. If it was underneath the plaster, Rabbi Shimon would say, you can't fault them for not realizing. What would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He would say, I also agree that the word Sid in the Pasuk is meant as a drosha, but Ki Sid, it means the Goyim are like lime. Masid ein lechakon al b'sreifa, just like lime, the only way to make it usable for its purpose is by burning it. Afoyt makutim or goyim, really, whatever. Ein lechakon al b'sreifa, the same way the goyim, the only way to fix them up and make them usable in the Eibush's world is it's burn off their evil and death. Like you burn lime to make it into a useful object. So also, you know, they need to undergo that in order to fulfill a purpose. Yeah. So you ask, which of these two tanoim does the following b'raisa go like? The b'raisa says, "V'shavisa shivir." At the beginning of Parshas Kisavoy, it talks about the eshes yifas toyer. It says you capture captives. What does the extra word shivir mean? It comes to include also the Knanim, members of the seven nations that live outside Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, Shibya, I mean, it comes to include Knanim who live outside Eretz Yisrael, because remember, this is talking about Melchamas Rishus. This is not talking about a Melchamas Mitzvah, where then, Loisachayah from the Shama, you're not allowed to leave anybody of the seven nations alive. Here we're talking about a Melchamas Rishus, an optional war outside the borders of Eretz Yisrael. So b'shavisa shivit, so b'davis k'nanim shem chutz la'aretz, it comes to include the k'nanim in chutz la'aretz, shem chozin b'tshuva, that if they want to do tshuva, meaning to accept the shemetz of Nenayach, or in the case of a yifas toyer, to actually become the yodis, m'kabla nois, and we accept them. K'man k'rib shimon, who would that have to be like? It would be like Rib Shimon, because Rib Shimon just said that that's why they wrote this pasuk l'man asher yolam deras kam lasos at the bottom over there, very, very bold, very, very standing out over there, to indicate that any goyim outside Eretz Yisrael are free to accept the shemetz of Nenayach, and we'll accept them. So this Braisa that's saying that it goes along with that, that yes, goyim outside outside the borders of Eretz Yisrael, even from the seven nations, they don't have to be killed. They can accept the shemetz of Nenayach, or in the case of Yifas Toyer, they can accept mitzvahs, and they'll be left alive.
Not in Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, the Tosfos deals with the question. Maybe Yifas Toyer is different. Maybe the case of Yifas Toyer is different, but the answer is that if it's a Yifas Toyer, if it's an Eretz Yisrael, after all, there's no Yifas Toyer, but it's a Chaya Kol Neshama. So we have to say necessarily we're talking about outside Eretz Yisrael. There's no way that we can say this referring to the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, that fits better with what Rav Shimon is saying, that they're addressing this Laman Asher Yolam Deras Kam Lasos, putting it in bold letters at the bottom, or some of them say like they left blank space underneath it to make it stand out, whatever it is, to make it stand out. Let everybody realize, let the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael realize that this is your last chance, and let the Goyim outside Eretz Yisrael realize that you're free to accept the Shemitah whenever you want to. And it is.